June 4, 2021, it's Spot Pedro Show.
Thank you.
for Pedro Show. Happy Friday. I started out John Coltrane doing Configuration. Came out after he passed away. Last thing he did with Rashid, Interstellar Space. And then Two Words for Now. Two Worlds for Now. Sorry about that, Michael. Michael Gendro, thank you so much for being on the show, and welcome aboard.
Truly. My pleasure.
And we got to give our brother Crux credit for the connect here. You're talking to me from the city?
I live in San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
Right in the middle.
Okay. So you must have been an old-timer knowing the rich.
Well, yeah. No, I've been moving. Well, I've moved back and forth. I spent a lot of time growing up in Ventura in L.A.
Oh, close to me.
Yeah, but I came up here in about 1988 or so. No, sorry, 83.
But that's, I think things, because I had some buddies who did that, and it was way more econo.
Yeah.
The slovenly guys went there in the early 80s, and yeah, it changed. Things changed, or maybe mid 80s. But anyway, let's get into your journey through music. Michael, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Oh, I think I saw some band somewhere when I was a 5 or 6 year old, and I looked at them and I said, I want to be that guy that's in the back playing. Smashing all those things. And so I wanted to be a drummer since I was six. I honestly don't remember what I saw. Maybe it was a live thing or on something on TV or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, I pursued it since then, just with this idea.
Well, can I ask you, in the pad you grew up, was there any music instruments?
No, yes and no, because I use record players for instruments nowadays.
Good point.
So there were record players and reel-to-reel tape players and amplifiers and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, for sure, those were good instruments and ones that I started using early.
And, the Elvin Jones Different Drummer. It's like a half-hour doc. You could see it on YouTube.com. But he talked about first getting on the pots and pans and shit. Did you do that?
Yeah, of course. All of that. You know, I still do.
Great. That's great.
Well, you know, you can bang on anything, right? And it always sounds good.
In fact, I got a theory about the first drums. I think it went with dance, and I think the first drumsticks was the bottom of our fucking feet, and the first drum was the earth.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think I agree with you about that.
That's a suspicion I got. Stuff. I got a suspicion. It's just a hunch. Now, what about the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, that would be Hot Butter's Popcorn.
Oh, man. Remember, it's a Watt for Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers. What about in the first gig, obviously, is one of your earliest musical recollections.
Well, I
gigs that you saw. I didn't mean play.
Oh, first gig I saw.
Yeah, you told me you saw some dude breaking shit. You wanted to be that.
Yeah, I don't remember what that was though. I don't know.
Well, that happens. Fuck, so much shit that's gone through my sieve of a memory. Fucking shit. Well, what about school? Were you into marching band or the choir or shit like
that?
Yeah.
Both. I was so I couldn't get my parents to buy me drums. They weren't really down with that. So they said, "Oh, if you join the school orchestra, we'll think about it." And so I did. So I started playing in the school orchestra at age 11, and went all the way up to being the principal timpanist in my junior high school.
So there must have been periods where you were rocking the triangle.
Yeah. We had a primitive marching band that somebody formed while we were there. I was the only snare drummer.
So I was going to ask you, match grip or traditional grip? Because, right, you got to sling it with that fucking...
I know. Yeah. I know both. Okay. I know. I learned both, and I still use both.
And you learned to read?
Yeah.
Great.
And write.
And, but besides the school thing, did you seek out a drum teacher?
Not till more recently, I studied with Willie Winant. You know
oh,
that
yeah.
guy.
Sure.
Yeah, I went to Mills in '89 to '91, and they
fucking closed that, right?
Yeah, they're talking about it. Yeah, exactly.
Fuck.
And I thought I already knew Willie from before anyway because I had gone to other schools that he was teaching in, but I got to focus down with him, Now, you know, and that's, again, that's 30 years of drumming before that, you know, 30 years of bad habits.
Well, let me ask you about in the formation phase of them bad habits. Now, I'm not talking after school, like graduating, but in the afternoon, the bedroom band, the garage band, the basement band, did you do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My parents were, after they finally did get me a drum set, they were nice about it. They let me really rock the neighborhood. And literally, I mean, we had a lot of angry neighbors.
Yeah, I was going to say the prac pad usually is the drummer's pad, right? Because it's set up.
It was, exactly.
Oh, shit. So what were you guys doing? Were you, like me and D. Boone, we were trying to copy, because it was the 70s, right? So we're trying to copy songs off records. Did you guys do that, or did you?
That's exactly what I did. Okay. I would put on a record, and I learned the whole record, you know. And I'm talking about everything from, you know, Elvin Jones, you played earlier, which actually my favorite drummer ever. Yeah. But also stuff like, you know, Yes and King Crimson or whatever. Just trying to.
Bill Bruford, that snare drum, always sounded like a hungry seal. Or like get a hand on that ring, Bill, because you can play like a motherfucker. But
yeah.
You know, timbales are timbales, snares, you know, that wire and shit. No.
Yeah.
He's an incredible cat. And it's all vocabulary anyway. I'll tell you a story about a guy who taught himself drums with learning off records. George Hurley, you know, he stopped making surfboards as a teenager. He buys My Generation. And no, what's the one with the quick one? Is it that one or Happy Jack? Yeah, it's Happy Jack. It's got a quick one while he's away. And then he bought Billy Cobham Spectrum.
Right? I was going to mention Billy Cobham.
So those two records, he just powered through it with headphones in about a year, taught himself fucking drums and keep moving, of course.
Exactly what I did, too. You know, and I was hard learning from Billy Cobham. I did that. He was like,
shit. I was reading shit about him because he's like New York City kid and doing drum corps, and they were talking about pracking, doing paradiddles to hold a quarter on the bulkhead, and then go down to dimes. Like, you look at Billy Cobham's drum heads, and there's one dent in the middle. Like, the accuracy thing is like insane. I want to play something you gave me here called Objects Separated by String.
Thank you.
something splendid is happening. Strangers hold hands and twirl like ice skaters. Every scarf and mitten is red. Dogs in sweaters touch noses. Light-colored coats and dark-colored coats glide like clouds into the envelopes between tall buildings. The church, which is boarded up, juts its steeple into the air, proud as a stable full of stamping horses. Smoke curls from non-existent chimneys. Lengthening shadows are jovial and animated. Shadows raise glasses and toast as if it's New Year's Eve. Banners unfurl and snap, embroidered in orange and gold. Clock hands, black as mountain pine, flash with brilliance. And in that brilliance, dogs, strangers, horses, and all the shadows stop, rapturous and astonished.
Bach for Pedro show. As objects separated by string, Michael Gendro. And then the fulfillment brought on by distance, brand new from Jaded Azurites, came out today. Karen Schomer on a poem, and I worked the piano bass. Michael Gendro after that with live concert at Luff. Okay, so let's go back to those habit-forming days. So did this band that you try to copy songs, was it just a practice band, or did you end up doing gigs with these guys?
I practiced for years, and then I got into one that we played a gig. The first gig we played, there was a riot, and it got shut down. I had to scramble to get my drums out. So that was it.
A little drama. It's hard to say if it was a success or a failure.
I think it was, I don't know. I think we had to do some growing.
Yeah, absolutely. Does band have a name?
I'm not going to repeat it if you don't mind. Because they actually went on. And I'm sort of embarrassed by how horrible they are.
That's going to happen, you know.
There was a lot of succession of bands. I was in a few right after that, RAF and Liquids and Youth Camp, all kinds of funny little...
Are these like your bands, or did you join guys? Because it seems like drummers... Or more guys like have to join the other dude's band.
Mostly. Yeah, I think I was mostly joining bands. Later in life, I started making my own bands, though, for sure, because I did get a little bit more selective.
but even though it wasn't your band, were you still involved with composition and stuff?
Yeah, great. And singing. And I always sing. I was one of those drummers that could sing, you know. I can still sing and play the drums. And so,
The first guys I saw do that was, they opened up the California Jam, Rare Earth.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Had a dude on 24/7 cowbell, right? It wasn't just one part. It was a whole fucking gig. His hand must have been a throbbing motherfucking catcher mitt.
That was a record that my parents had that I would hear around the house. Yeah, my parents were great for this because they had stuff like that, but they also had Dave Brubeck. So I learned from Joe Morello.
Oh yeah.
All these kinds of lounge music and stuff like that was around.
I think Rare Earth was the only white Motown act.
Yeah.
They were tripping, but there's other drummer singers too, and then like Dave Grohl, if you fuck the kid, I'm gonna get some other guy to do it. Right. And then if he doesn't do it right, I'm gonna record over him, and that guy's gonna get pissed. But hey, it's his band. Come on. So I bring this up because Georgie was way into Chico Hamilton, and there was some drama with Chico Hamilton trying to get songwriting credit. Like, drummers can't write songs. Bullshit. The notes just don't last as long, but give me a break. So after school, do you go to, like, music school?
I started to study music. I went to university to study music, but I quickly dropped out because I didn't want to play Bach on the piano. No disrespect for Bach. I just don't have it in me.
Because I don't think the piano was invented yet. I think he's playing organ.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe. I don't know.
He's playing on an harpsichord, yeah. So I switched to physics. And so I studied physics. But then, I did go back to music.
Hey, you know what? I had some other science people on. And, do you think there's a connect?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. The reason I switched is because I was reading, Yiannis Xenakis. I was reading his books, and I was like, how can I be into music if I can't read this stuff? It's just really complicated, and it requires advanced mathematics. So I went into it just because I figured that it's just part of music now.
Well, you mentioned Mr. Bach, and he got help from Mr. Newton to find where the third was.
Yeah.
Right? The third, no one really knew where fucking was. Well, they did know, but they all lost it and forgot. Got from connect. Yeah, Muslims.
They couldn't figure out exactly where it was.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I guess there's a... If you hear it right, like what we call minor, actually they were here in Africa. We call that blues, but, you know,
yeah.
It's all just words for natural phenomena, right? It's our superstructure on top of what's actually working.
Yeah, I see the science in the music. I mean, I really am basically at heart a musician. In fact, Xenakis himself said something really beautiful. He said, you know, I may use some algorithm or whatever to develop this piece of music, but if in the end it doesn't sound good, I'm going to change it.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody once told me physics is like the harmony and chemistry is the rhythm. Or I mean, there's like kind of parallels and stuff like that. But while you were doing your physics study, you were still doing bands on the side?
Yeah, oh yeah. I was all through studying at UC, I had a band called Crawling with Tarts, and
we're gonna play that in the third hour. I didn't know the chronology. Fuck.
Oh yeah,
I got
okay,
it
yeah.
Backwards.
Yeah,
sorry, Mike.
That band went from about 1983 to 1996, I think. And so, I all throughout my physics studies, I played in that band. We did quite a few gigs. We put out a lot of records.
But because of school, maybe no touring?
No, we didn't. It wasn't that. We actually had offers. My bandmate was didn't like to travel.
Yeah. Oh, it was the bandmate, not you.
Yeah, I play internationally a lot now. Yeah. Whenever I can. We've had a little bit of a pause during the pandemic.
Oh,
here,
of
but,
course.
You know,
course.
Other than that.
But I was talking about those older days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we played around. We played locally. We got flown out to a festival here and there, you know.
But you didn't get in the van and do 2 months.
Yeah, no. Not that. That was later when I got into the rope. That's another one I sent you. That band is also historical, but it was a great one. And we did tour in a van with that one.
Our rope?
With rope, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to... you just don't pronounce that first R? Or did I misspell it?
Nobody knows.
Oh, okay. I'm going to play that next hour. Again, I didn't know the crotch. I'm sorry. But, so these are the earlier bands. Okay. And, I mean, obviously you had your own personal ways of music, but there was other influences coming in informing your drumming, right?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, for sure. Actually, you know, what I've been doing lately is, especially in this lockdown, we were talking about playing along with records. Now what I do is I put on a recording I made of the ocean or something like that, or a rock slide or something, and play along with that. It's it's a much more chaotic style, and that doesn't sound. You know, that's not supposed to sound peaceful or anything necessarily. You can play along with the ocean, and it sounds like it does. I think that this is what Elvin Jones sounds like when he's really carrying a huge background sound.
Yeah. Well, he plays in swells. And like,
yeah, exactly.
He talks about that in that different drummer doc where the dude said he couldn't hold time. It was his time was, and Ron Carter talks about it. And then other drummers started adopting the style. You know, they were at first, you know, just like the jocks, right? Fuck you, Devo. And then they're painting their fingernails 2 years later.
That's it. That swells. I got to see that doc. But that's exactly what it is. And you know, that's what, if you have a recording in the ocean and you're playing along with it, that's exactly what it's telling you to do.
Well, I do, because I'm in Pedro here, right? It's the harbor of Los Angeles. And we got water right up on the rocks. And you hear, that's how rocks get at the beach get round, because they're pounded constantly.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's how they get somewhere else, too. They roll somewhere. They end up somewhere downstream.
Yeah. That's a whole trip, too, about it being a medium for energy, like stuff from Hawaii I'm getting how many weeks later or some shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of, maybe not theory and other musicians, but kind of a connect with nature?
It's just to connect with, it's kind of hard to put it like that. I don't want it to sound fuzzy in any way, but it's kind of more of a connect with a sort of certain life energy stream, right? Something that's going on that you're feeling. I don't know what it is, you know. I'm not particularly a spiritual person or anything like that, but I feel these energies around me, and I want to respond to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what it is. It's the same, but I take it the same even with conventional drumming. I just like the power of this sort of flexibility. It's not playing a military tattoo.
Yeah. That's what I didn't like about Buddy Rich's playing. She's military. I can deal with the cussing and the clams. You know, shit.
And the throwing of the cymbals.
I love it when fucking Freddie Hubbard gave it to him. Right? You ever hear that tape? You jive, motherfucker. Yeah. Anyway, what about the idea of performance?
Well, I love it. So now I'm doing these mostly solo performances. I still play in a couple of bands, but when I do the solo performances, I like to go work in the space for a couple of days before I'm going to give the show, and make the music from the space. So in other words, I'm recording vibrations and I'm recording ambient sounds that are in the space, and then I'm going to use those to make the concert. So taking the language of the space. I love to do this. And then, you know, so the preparation for the concert is takes days, and then you blow it all out in 30 minutes. It's maybe not an efficient way to perform, but
I think, you know, the old vaudeville saying, work the room, you are literally fucking working the room.
Yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, June 4th, 2021 edition, Juan Pedro Show. Special guest, Michael Gendral. Am I saying that right?
I you can say it that way. It gets said a lot of ways. It's pronounced Gendro.
Gendro. Okay, I can say that.
But you can say
get all French on you. No problem. Hold tight for hour two. June 4, 2021. It's the second hour of Juan Pedro Show.
thoughts running through my head. Racing, turning, churning through my head. Thoughts pulsing all the time. My body's aching. I'm so tired. But I can't switch off.
Thank you.
Here we go. Watt for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with feedback. Revision one. Michael Gendreau.
Shit. Already fucked it up.
Sorry, Michael. Then we had Tim Hohouse featured Leva with something brand new they did called Insomnia. And they did a video to go with it. It's about not being with Conk, right? Terrible. Mm. A Wet Cigarette from Canada after that with Eventual Tin. Elliot Sharp, great guitar man out of New York City with Mind Suck. And Michael Gendreau with L'Écrit de Bâtiment de Free Art. Mm. So I destroyed the French language again. Sorry. Pardon. Okay. So, Michael, getting back to the so prepping up for a gig. So the idea of not playing always the same gig, huh? So you go different places. You have a change of scenery.
Well, I've got to play the same rooms a couple of times, which is great because then I already have all the I have all the codes, you know, already for the room. So it does not take as much work, but nevertheless, it's meant that the pieces don't really that the one you just played the was in Freiburg, Switzerland, and
That's the border town between German speaking and French speaking Switzerland.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's
I played there's a big club there, right?
It's a
long place. It actually has two rooms, and man, they feed you good there too. It's like the Sandpils. They say she's a feeder.
Yeah.
My papa was a sailor, and he said in the Navy it was always about chow.
So I remember. That's important. You know, it's in the rider, isn't it?
Now Freiburg. So okay, I know this place. Then you played. So you tailored your piece to the pad.
Yeah, they let me in there. You know, I tell them, okay, I need to stay here a couple of days before and work on it. Fortunately, it's a festival, so it's going on. I just play towards the end of the festival. Actually, the president of they don't call him a president. The Prime Minister of Switzerland came to that gig. That was the only time I did for royalty.
Yeah, command performance.
They wouldn't like it if I called it royalty, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, bosses.
The boss.
The man, el hombre. Okay. But, and how'd it go?
Oh, it was great. I really could shake the building. It's made of wood. And I also put some sensors up in the attic and some in the basement and... really just was able to take feedback through the entire building. KG Hino was there, and he said, we're going to collaborate.
Oh, wow. He's an interesting man, definitely.
He said, you know, I made an earthquake. And so, that's the idea.
Well, how are the sensors evolved, Michael?
So it's from my work. I get these. I borrow these sensors that are measuring vibrations, and they measure very low vibrations. So it's really great. You don't even have to hear anything. You sometimes can't hear what's going on. But if it does pick up the sense of a space. If you're in a space, then you may not be detecting the fact that you're hearing the metro go by or the traffic or whatever. But it's really there in the vibration. Right.
Yeah, and this was it keeps the piece dynamic and changing with the fucking changes.
Absolutely. So what's going on outside?
Isabella was on the show a couple months ago, and he was talking about moving towards this. He was using electronic music, and he wanted some way where it kind of shapes how it's becoming by what it's already playing.
Yeah, I think that's important. So I compose these pieces in form, but I really take it's really improvised in the end because it does has to respond to what's going on in space.
I mean, what's the other way? You watch the guy press the space bar.
Yeah. Nothing like that.
I know.
That's too boring for me.
But you know what that happened? They got a little table set up. The guy gets up there. I've seen it. I've seen four dudes at a table, each with their own space bar. I want to play, okay, Nick, this rope band you were in.
Thank you.
Locked Pedro Show, OK Nick from Rope, Plasterman after that with Hardcore 1984, Slang from Hokkaido, some hardcore. It's trippy about hardcore, you know, no matter where you're from, you know how it's going to sound. All these cats, the whole world playing the same song. OK, Michael Gendreau with Polvo Saran, Mas Polvo, Enamorato. Destroyed maybe Spanish. So right. I'm sorry, lo siento. So, tell me something about that. This Polvo. Well, you told me about Rope. It was a band you joined, the young guys, when you were a younger man. But this one here, Polvo Saran.
Yeah, so that's from a live concert that I gave in Lausanne, Switzerland. And basically, I can't, you know, so I can't really duplicate the experience of these concerts because it's really about the vibration in the space, and it really only works in that space. So what I get, what I end up with is sort of an artifact, and then I just take that and remix it into something that is satisfying on its own that can be played anywhere. But still, if you were to take that recording and play it back in the space that it was originally recorded, and it would be really a much more dynamic. But I try to make it so that it's something something to take away, you know?
Yeah. Impression, right? Brand upon the brain.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah. There's two, I guess there's like, people like to coast, right? They don't want to pay attention.
So, yeah, it's really like what all music is like, isn't it? Right? You know, you play a gig and you're experiencing that place, and whatever kind of music it is you're doing, as long as it's a dynamic music that you're actually engaged in playing in the space with the people there responding to it, that's going to be different than the recording that you take out of it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unless you're total, you know, wall off everybody in your mind and automaton sleepwalk or drugged out
or an organ grinder.
Or an organ grinder, right. Yeah, people, we were talking off air about these incredible technicians. They would, you know, they're not playing these things. They're just actually powering the, it's kind of the idea of the player piano, right, with the holes in the paper.
Yeah, or
kind of like the space bar on the power book.
At least with the player piano, you can vary the speed.
Yeah. Have you ever seen old timey ones? They've got like a whole band in a box.
Yeah. Oh, those. Yeah, I saw a guy do a show about those playing. I'm forgetting the name of the great composer who was living in Mexico City. But he brought that box. But I grew up with one. My father rebuilt player pianos and would sell them to pizza
players. Wow, I didn't know that.
So, yeah, and I mean, they were fun. But like I said to you, that's why I know you can. They had a couple of different controls on them. You could it depends on how fast you pump, but you can also vary the loudness and a few other things. It's basically mechanical music.
Right. But you know what I'm talking about? Not just a piano, but they had a little drum in there and horns.
Yeah.
And yeah, they would squeeze on the rubber ball, you know, all this. But the old word was automaton. We say mechanized now, but I think they called it automaton or something. Because they had dolls that did shit like this, too.
Oh, yeah.
Puppets.
Yeah. Oh, the in San Francisco, we have the Musée Mécanique, which has all kinds of those things still.
That's right. And, I mean, in those days, right, it's a novelty. For us, it's like that's almost the way of life. There's so much mechanization going along. So when you go to the music thing, but I don't know. I don't want to judge something until I've experienced it. So anything just on, you know, I don't like the concept of that. That's too short-sighted. Life's too short.
I went through that with using turntables because in Crawling with Tarts, we were only two people, so we realized we needed some support. So we started using turntables, and I've taken them, into the future, and realized that instrument, although it seems like a mechanical instrument, it is incredibly flexible. You can do so much with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're willing to take it apart and to experiment with it. So it can become an instrument. Well, it's like banging on a pot.
Yeah, running by a picket fence with a stick, right?
Yeah,
Children
yeah.
of the Grave on Master Reality. Look, we're gonna get to hear Crawling with Tarts coming right up, because we're at the end of the second hour, June 4, 2021, edition of Wat Pedro Show. Special guest Michael Gendro. Am I getting closer?
Gendro.
Okay. Hold tight for our three, people. Here we go. I'm a slow learner. June 4, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wat from Pedro Show.
Yeah. Thank you.
Live from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Crawling with Tarts. Tubin' Tarting. Sorry. Screwing that up. But Bahamas Prendon after that was Soulful Dirge Fair. That's a title. And then Crawling with Tarts again with George Nick Maria. The threefer. No, or is that Gorge? It's not George, it's Gorge.
It's George misspelled, yeah.
Oh, it's George misspelled, okay. So let's talk about this band, because interesting, that you, like you were saying, you need the support so that the turntables.
Yeah. Well, that band, Crawling with Tarts, that came out of a punk rock band that I was in called Youth Camp. And Suzanne was the bass player and I was the drummer. And then we kind of fell in love and split off. We quit the band, and they were mad, the other guys. but we couldn't help it, and so we started to. We were actually making zines, little magazines at the time, and decided that one would have a cassette in it, and that was the creation of Crawling with Tarts. And so it's a really really open ended project that just allowed anything to come into it. And
except drums and bass.
Yeah, no, we did that too. I didn't send you those tracks, but
I love this stuff. It's trippy as hell. I love it.
We carried on with the drums and bass, all through it. Not as much. It really transformed into a band that was mostly doing turntable pieces at the end, and up to 8 turntables at a time. But nothing mechanical, but just really, really messing with the vinyls, and cutting our own vinyls to use for these concerts.
And if we're talking 8, there's layers.
Yeah. And so I have a couple of cutting lathes here in the house, and we would sometimes cut our own records to use so that we could, do special things with them. Records that didn't have continuous grooves, for example, they would just be interrupted. So,
what about closed grooves?
Yeah,
there was a Monty Python record, right? That has 3 sides. It depends drop that stylus.
I had that record.
Matching tie and neckerchief, the cheese shop, or some shit.
Yeah,
you can't hear it unless you put that needle on the right, because they put grooves inside the other grooves.
I know, it was really hard to get that third track.
So did you do shit like that? I mean, you became a lathe guy, a master guy.
Yeah. We still have here in the house a couple of lathes, and we still cut stuff for doing. So another band I'm in now with my partner, Julia Mazawa, we both play turntables, and there's probably 15 turntables in this house, and 3 cutting lathes. And so we're still, I still find that to be a very evocative medium to work in, because you can really cut the dirt into the vinyls if you want.
Can I ask you about cutting? Because, people make the mothers from the lacquers and stuff, but you don't need to do that. Yours are actually going to be used for performance, so probably
not. No, specifically not. In fact, we mostly, it's amazingly easy to find old transcription discs still around, things that are 50 to 80 years old in thrift stores or whatever. But the great thing about them is that they decay so quickly. So if you cut something into it and play it back, play a loop in it, say, 5 times. By the 5th time, it's a completely different sound. This is great.
It's like aging.
Yeah, you can just beat them up live, and it's really a powerful sound, I think, with all the surface noise and all that.
What's your favorite turntable?
Does it matter? No, I have one of my favorite ones. I don't even remember the brand, but it goes down to 8 RPM.
Whoa!
Yeah. I bring that one on a lot of gigs with me because in fact, one of the pieces I gave you uses that one, Grand Service Noise Opera Number 9, because it.
That's what we're going to have at the end.
It's
a half hour, baby.
Okay.
I love it.
Because it can play so, it's so great when you play. Especially if you play a 78 RPM record at 8 RPM, that's just, really evokes the gods.
Let's hear, well, we're going to hear that, but Lars Mars Orchestra.
Visit all the very gay places, those come what may places, where one relaxes on the axis of a wheel of life to get the feel of life from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew at Sam, sullen gray faces with distant gay traces that used to be there. You could see where they've been washed away by too many through the day. 12 o'clock came. Then you came along with your siren song, tempt me to madness. I thought for a while that your poignant smile was tinged with the sadness of a great love for me. Ah, yes, I was wrong. Again, I was wrong. Life is lonely again. And only last year, everything seemed so sure. Now life is awful again. A truffle of hearts would only be a bore. A week in Paris will ease the bites of it. All I care is to smile in spite of it. I'll forget you, I will, though yet you are still burning inside my brain. Romance is much stifling those who strive. In some small dive, and there I'll be while I rot with the rest of those whose lives are. Girls, pardon.
the promoter. It's the classic time-honored pyramid shape made of whiskey that's been passed down from generation to generation and keeps the gears of the turn-up truck lubricated.
Lock for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, Lars Mars Orchestra with Lush Life. SLWCC Watt after that. That's a pledge with Sam Locke Ward out of Iowa City that I did last month with him, an album. And then finally, Michael Gendro with Grand Surface Noise Opera Number 9. Now, you understand surface noise. Now, you heard about the turntables, people. It's not just random nomenclature there. There's a reason for these titles. What about titles, Michael?
Oh, I like poetry. You know, I like to find something that. What I do is I save up phrases that I found, and I have a list. And so then I make a piece of music and I try to figure out which one fits it best. Sometimes you know something's obvious, but. It's just poetry.
No, I asked about that because I always have to start with the title or I don't know what the fuck I'm writing. Nobody else I know does that, though. Everybody puts on titles last. But you collect titles.
Yeah, I collect titles.
Or potential titles.
We'll see what happens. I'm gonna try your style. And
okay.
See if I, see
well,
if
it
I
gives me an anchor, right? Like Bob Dylan wrote propaganda songs. I know what this one's about.
I love that song. But...
it's only going to have two parts, but...
yeah.
Actually, yeah, it's kind of one part. It's played a little differently. Well, TDI, you know, people say three chords. TDI is one chord. A Lime in the Coconut's one chord. Harry Nilsson. Yeah.
I sold a lot of that record. I used to work in the Licorice Pizza in Ventura in 1983 or something like that. And I got the Minutemen in. We sold a lot of that record. We had to spin it in the shop I made for. So thank you for that music.
No problem. That's a weird Minutemen record. It's the only one where I wrote all the songs. I didn't write all the words. I only wrote half the words, but I wrote all the music. And I didn't write the guitar solos or drum fills, but I wrote all. Well, I was having double knee surgery, so I was the guy with some time on his hands.
I don't remember if Black Sheep came for that record or not, but that.
No, it's on Joy before that. And Georgie wrote the words. You know, Georgie wrote a lot of the best, besides Steve Boone, Minuteman words. Where can people find you on the internet, Michael?
Oh, boy. Okay, I have a website at michaelgendro.net.
Okay, spell that. michaelgendrau.net, people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What, you got a recording you're working on now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm working on a compilation of tracks. My next record is going to have, I think, 10 sides to it. And it's because there's a lot of work that I dug up and haven't put out yet. So
when you get that out, will you come back on the show? Can we play some? Well, obviously not
ten
records, but you make some good excerpts for me, and
We
can talk about the whole thing because it sounds like kind of a retrospective.
In a way, yeah, but it's I guess so. I suppose I feel like the same as I was. You know, when I was a teenager still, so I can't tell the difference.
No, but that's the magic of music. Viva la musique, you know. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a lifeline. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, but please come back when you get this 10-sider out. I remember I got a 10-record box bootleg of Bobby Dylan called Ten of Swords. But I guess yours is 5 records with 10 sides.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike Watt.
Absolutely.
This has been great.
Okay, Mike. People, it's been June 4, 2021, Dish Watt Pedro, so keep your powder dry.